You're listening to United Nations Radio in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. Later in the program, peace and security challenges facing small island developing countries. And we hear how child traffickers are tricking families affected by the earthquake in Nepal. But first, a bulletin of news. Around 340,000 people in eight of the worst affected areas of the southern Yemeni port city of Aden have begun receiving food from the UN World Food Programme, WFP. On Thursday, the agency announced it is distributing two-month food rations to locations which have not been reached since April due to conflict. Fighting between a Saudi-led coalition and Houthi rebels has plagued the Middle Eastern country since late March. Stephanie Kutrix has the story.
The food delivered by the World Food Programme to hundreds of thousands of people includes wheat flour, pulses, and cooking oil. WFP says it is working to overcome insecurity, checkpoints, and what it called many other hurdles in Yemen to reach desperate families unable to feed their children. Since April, the agency has reached some 2.6 million conflict-affected and severely food-insecure people in 13 of Yemen's governorates. Even before the war broke out, Yemen imported almost 90% of its basic food from abroad. The impact of traders being unable to import enough food and safely move it inside the country has reportedly led to a severe spike in prices, which WFP says is increasing the suffering of the poorest and most vulnerable. Stephanie Kutrix, United Nations.
Human trafficking is a growing global problem which requires a fundamental shift in policy if the terrible exploitation it causes is to be stopped, a top human rights expert said Thursday. Maria Grazia Giammarinaro said that more than a decade of trying to combat the practice had brought only modest results. The Italian judge and UN Independent Special Rapporteur on Trafficking was speaking on World Day Against Trafficking in Persons, marked annually on the 30th of July. She said an increasing number of people are becoming victims of the practice after fleeing persecution, war, or other emergencies. For Ms. Giammarinaro, it's time governments tackled the gross human rights violations that these vulnerable people experience. The reported killing of two Iraqi journalists by extremists has been condemned by the head of UNESCO, the UN's cultural agency. Newspaper editor Suha Ahmed Radi and cameraman Jalal Al-Abadi were targeted in separate incidents involving militants, UNESCO said Thursday. Daniel Johnson has more.
According to the UN agency, both journalists were killed in separate incidents in northern Iraq earlier this month. UNESCO Director General Irina Bokova expressed deep concern about the reported killings, saying that it had become very difficult for the public to know what is happening in parts of Iraq because of violent extremists. The latest episode comes on top of the four journalists already killed so far in 2015 in Iraq, according to Reporters Without Borders. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
You've been listening to a bulletin of news from the United Nations in New York. The big issues facing small island developing states, or SIDS, were the focus of debate in the UN Security Council on Thursday. These challenges include tackling climate change, combating transnational organized crime, and meeting development goals. Although they comprise less than 40 countries, SIDS span from the Caribbean to Africa and the Pacific. They're also located in the Indian Ocean and the South China Sea. For UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, the issues facing small island developing states, or SIDS, are global challenges. He reminded the Security Council that SIDS are on the front lines of climate change.
Over the years, SIDS leaders have been consistently calling for global climate action, and they have been leading by example. We must support SIDS in their actions to combat climate change and adapt to its impact.
Samoa's Prime Minister, Tuilaepa Salele Malelegoa, spoke of the misconceptions facing SIDS in the Pacific. Because the region lives up to its name, he said it is tempting to believe it is peaceful. However, he listed examples of transnational organized crimes occurring there, such as trafficking of drugs and firearms, money laundering, and people smuggling.
International crime is unlikely to decrease in the immediate future. And if allowed to take a firm foothold, It will not only be detrimental to those Pacific Island countries currently affected, but the entire Pacific.
Jean-Paul Adam, finance minister of the Seychelles, saw new threats on the horizon.
Al-Shabaab in Somalia has profited from the lack of maritime capacity in our region and has used the sea lanes to bolster its position in certain parts of Somalia, while also creating profitable trades in illicit goods. Our region is very reliant as well on tourism, and we must work in concert to ensure that we protect our livelihoods, while also ensuring that the people of Somalia do not have to live in fear that comes with Al-Shabaab.
Meanwhile, Caribbean SIDS have been stymied in meeting development goals due to several factors, including high external debt levels. Jamaica's Prime Minister, Portia Simpson-Miller, supported a UN debt relief strategy for middle-income SIDS in that region.
Comprehensive debt relief for Caribbean SIDS that would gradually write off 100% of our multilateral debt stock is timely. In our view, this proposal is worthy of serious consideration and support from the international community.
More than 70 countries are participating in the UN Security Council meeting on peace and security challenges facing small island developing states. Lured by promises of education and health care, families affected by the earthquake in Nepal are unknowingly sending their children to facilities which exploit them. That's according to Virginia Perez, Chief of Child Protection in Nepal for the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF. UNICEF is working with local police to intercept young people and return them to their families. Siobhan Garside asked Ms. Perez if child trafficking had been a problem in Nepal prior to the earthquake in April.
Well, it was an issue before the earthquake, but unfortunately it was very difficult for us to get reliable data. The research and the study that we've been quoting as the reliable one is as old as 2001.
So how do the traffickers approach them? What is the incentive for the parents, and what are the intentions of the traffickers themselves?
There are, let's say, two types of trafficking. Here we're talking about internal trafficking within the country and external. The internal one is from children in rural areas towards care homes and orphanages in Kathmandu. So in this case, it's mostly the owners of these privately run care homes who reach out to parents and then convince them to give their children away with very often fake promises of better access to education and health, when the reality often is that the children are in poor conditions and exploited by the owners of these privately run care homes. As for the external trafficking towards India and from there to another countries, it follows a bit the same logic for younger children, in which parents are persuade to give their children away with the promise of a job or a better future in India. And sometimes girls are approached by young men, or either women, but mostly young men, again with promises of good employment abroad.
What are your priorities as of today with this problem?
Our first priority is preserve family and family units. So we've been supporting local governments, local organizations to scale up their capacity to deploy social workers. They're visiting all the village and affected districts, identifying those families more vulnerable, and therefore children that are more at risk of being taken away, given away, traffickers or owners of orphanages. And then we provide a family preservation package in which we help the families to provide for the basic needs of their children and also the education. We're also supporting police in strengthening the patrolling and the checkpoints all across the border with India, some points with China, but also in the intersections. We're also working with the Ministry of Social Welfare and its institutions to strengthen legislation.
The children that you do rescue, what happens to them? What is the outcome for them?
The children that we have in rescue are temporarily placed in government-run institutions, and the family tracing starts immediately. And most of the children that we have intercepted, that we have rescued, as you said, have already been reunified with their families.
You've been listening to United Nations Radio in New York. I'm Deanne Penn.